You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Folks, Mother's Day is around the corner, and let me talk to you about 1-800-Flowers. I can't wait. Every year, it's a tradition. I send stuff to my mother, my mother-in-law, and my wife because they are three amazing moms. They're better than all your moms out there. You think you have good moms? No, I have good moms in my life. I'm just kidding. This was a little harsh. I'm sure you guys all have good moms too. From your mom to the mother of your children and all the moms in between, this Mother's Day, give back to the ones that have given you everything. 1-800-Flowers helps you celebrate all amazing moms, from homemade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts, ordered easily and delivered fresh. For a limited time, you can save up to 40% off Mother's Day bestsellers at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan. Don't wait. Order today and save up to 40% at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey, please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Stugatz is hiding in plain sight over there with audio-proof glass between us because he doesn't want any parts of offering to take a Michael Venom Page kick for $1,000. He made the choice recently, but doesn't want to actually do it. It's nice to see you. It was nice to watch you work against Kevin Holland. He's a veteran fighter. He's tough. He's respected by all. You're 22-2 in your division. We were talking before you came on. You're a bit you must be a bit insane because I don't think people who do what you do for a living are sane. But how much damage would you do to him if you were trying to do damage to him with a leg kick and he was standing in front of you?
Well, the fight before this fight, I stole someone's kneecap basically with a kick. So that's a fully trained fighter, so I'm sure I would.
You stole his kneecap.
He's laughing.
Well, it is a bit crazy. I don't think people understand.
$25,000.
I give it back.
I don't think people understand. Your body is a weapon, correct?
Yes. Definitely trained weapon.
And a trained weapon that does its most damage. Like, if you had to damage someone the most with something of that ilk, what would you produce?
Well, I've damaged a few people. I think my most famous finish, I caved somebody's head in with a jump knee. So that's probably the worst thing that's
Sounds painful.
It seems like a horror.
Yeah.
It seems like... So does this sport choose you, or did you choose it?
You know, I'm going to say it chose me. Now, to be fair, it's a bit of both. So martial arts separately, just being involved in martial arts is a family thing. My mom did it. My dad did it. My siblings all do it. So martial arts was just that chose me. But in terms of going into a professional sport from there, you know, I made a decision to go to mixed martial arts specifically.
How many brothers?
There's quite a few of us. There's 7 of us all together.
There must be legendary fight stories in your youth. Now, what are the age differences? If you guys get into a fight in your youth and everyone's trained in the mixed martial arts.
To be fair, we started in kickboxing. And my sister's the oldest one, and nobody messes with her. So, you know, if we even start an argument, the second she walks into the room, it's game over.
Did anyone dare to mess with the family?
Nah, not really. You mess with one, you mess with all. So,
so when you cave
definitely
in,
not.
When you cave in someone's face afterwards, is there a sorry about that? Or yeah,
no, of course. I always say like you. We have a fight persona. That fight persona is you know, you turn into something. You go to a dark place, or you turn into something that is an alter ego of yourself. But when you come back out, you know, you're back to yourself. You know, it's very different. So, you know, obviously when I'm going in there, you know, you don't regret anything in that moment.
Can you explain this part to us, though? Are you talking about something primal there? You're talking about something that you Do you even recognize who? Well, now you've gotten comfortable with that person.
Yes.
But you're talking about a predator who is preying for money.
Oh, 100%. You know where? To be fair, I think it's less about the money. It's more just the I always say just the experience of walking out into a cage, into a crowd, and facing an opponent and winning. That feeling of winning as well. It's a drug. It's a drug in itself. So we don't take away the money. I guarantee you, the majority of people will still do it. That are in it at a high level, they'll still want to do that, and then just have work at the end afterwards. But it's just there's just something about it that is just addictive.
So where do you keep the stolen kneecap?
we gave it back. So he's fixed it.
it's interesting the way you describe that, because Ray Lewis described football as you don't pay me for Sundays. You get Sundays for free. Monday through Saturday is what you pay me for. Hmm. The preparation is what you get paid for. You're saying the Coliseum spectacle shit, can I be better than another man and we're stripped down to nothing but our tools? You're saying that's the best a person can feel.
That's the best a person can feel. It's a very egotistical sport. Most sports are, but this one is different. Somebody is really trying to take you out. It's not about a game that's being played. It's someone's trying to take you out, and there's a lot of ego involved. And yeah, we're just trying to be better than that person in front of us.
Do you sort of fancy yourself as a modern day professional hunter of humans?
It's a good way of looking at it. The thing is, I still see.
He's
it.
Predator. I mean, the question is crazy.
I mean, but he's 22-2 in the fighting sports. He's as good as there is at the top of I fight you, and he's saying it's not even for money. I fight you because I like the challenge of fighting 100%. You. I don't think you can beat me at this weight.
100%. No, it's a good way. I do enjoy it as I do see it as a sport. I think I've done it so long now that I don't even when I'm speaking to people about my performances, some people are looking at me like, what? You're trying to hurt somebody, but I see it as a game.
How does it work in everyday life with you? Because your hands and feet are lethal weapons, right? Mm-hmm. When somebody picks a fight with you who doesn't know who you are, you're not allowed to use those lethal weapons on the street, right?
Well, we are.
Do you?
Take it back. That's a bad question.
No, I didn't ask it right, apparently.
But, that one's wild.
Like, when you're not in the octagon, you can't get into a fight because you might kill somebody.
No, of course. The good thing about being trained is, and like I said, the being in the cage is a massive part of your ego that you have to use. Second you leave the cage, it's a massive part of your ego that you don't care to use anymore. We have to do that every single day. I get to challenge myself with my teammates every single day. Going out to somebody, I'm usually the guy that will talk everything down. Like, oh, come on, man, that's fine. I'll buy you a drink, guys. It's not that serious. Like, I'll calm everything down because I have nothing to prove. I've done it before, and somebody's found out after the fact who I was, and he's like, "I'm so sorry." That he's like, "I didn't even realize you." I said, "No, it's no problem. We don't lead with ego." And you find that a lot with fighters. We exert that button a lot in the gym, so we don't need to use it.
That's interesting. You're talking about the emotional drain of it too.
Yes.
By the time you leave there, because you're fighting other people who fight for a living,
yep.
You don't even want to do. You're more work.
Tired.
I got to do more work.
Tired. I'm out here to have fun now. Right now, this is my downtime. So I don't need to cross into that.
I want to
again.
Talk about the alter ego though, because I don't think anyone listening to this quite understands the mixture of fear, courage, everything required to. I'm going to fight in front of a bunch of people.
Mm-hmm.
I've trained for months, and so have you.
Yep.
And now I just need to be better than you. And one wrong move,
mm-hmm.
and I'm embarrassed by the internet.
Yep.
For a long time, because I've gotten knocked out, or I've gotten my kneecap stolen, or I've got my face caved in. Can you explain to me the mentality? Because I don't think any of us understand what that is.
Yeah, it is really difficult. And I think a lot of people, this is the difference between being at the top and being amongst the numbers. Because if you can't perform in that moment, because I've seen there's certain guys that we have in our gym, and I've seen and heard stories about in other gyms that are exceptional in the gym. Unbelievable in the gym, but then when you go out to the crowd and it drains you, and they just can't perform in the same way that we see every day in the gym. There's something else that you need, that you have to dig deep. You have to be comfortable being on show and comfortable with exactly that, these things that could go wrong. And I always go through a phase of I allow my negative thoughts to come through. Like, you know, I could get knocked out. And, you know, especially with my style, people love to hate my style. They love to love it, but they also love to hate it because it's showy. People don't like, they don't always like the show off guy. So, you know, I can get knocked out. People are going to be, you know, the comments and this and that and that. But I allow myself to go through that. And then I'm like, nah, but I'm the guy, man. I'm that guy. I can do this. And then I finish on that. It's like I start with a negative and finish. But instead of trying to avoid it, because sometimes it stores up inside you and then it just makes you struggle. When you get into the cage, let's say you get hit once and then all those negative thoughts start to come in that moment. And now it's hard to avoid while you're also, you've this guy.
You've reached real confidence.
Oh, yes.
I mean, that's bliss. That's for a fighter? Yes. That is real confidence. Doesn't mean it's not fearless, but for you to be aware of what the fear looks like and be like, yeah, that's normal, but I'm better than this person.
Yep. And everyone has to have their own process. And, you know, I can explain mine, but it might not work for you. Everyone, you need to understand yourself. And it's been years. It's taken me many, many years to understand the process for me. And yeah, I feel like I've found, you know, where it's work, and I execute as best as I can.
MVP, I was in the building on Saturday night when you came out, the Undertaker music, doom, everything went purple. We want to play it on the screen right now. You dancing, you wanted to do something, yes. Right? We friend of our show, Ariel Helwani.
Yeah.
You told him on the show that you wanted to have something different, that the UFC was like, let's not do that right now. Can you explain that, what that was?
Yeah, so we was going to have a little bit of I think just something for the audience. And I love to entertain. I really do. I really take the entertainment side of it seriously. I think I'm very intentional about things that I say, things that I do, everything. And I think this is kind of a side that fighters don't pay attention to. They just focus solely on the fighting. But for me, I was like, okay, think about, you know, you're in the audience now. You know, lights go dark. Everyone's used to seeing everybody walk out the tunnel, you know, so everyone's looking at the tunnel waiting for, you know, this, you know, MVP's arrival to the UFC. And then lights go dark, then the light goes on back in the cage, and my figure is standing in the cage. And everyone's like, wait a minute, what's going on here? He's in the cage already, you know? Everyone's just like, what? Everyone's cheering, okay, yeah. And it's the intro, the Undertaker song. Then the lights go switch off again, right? As the track drops, and then I'm in the same position, lights off, lights back on, and I'm exactly the same position. It looks like I've just done a magic trick, and I've just switched, you know, and I've just randomly, Undertaker style, just come from one place to the other, and then that same walkout would have come, the end, you know, the music drops, and I would have, but they were like, chill, it's your first time, man, just relax.
they don't want you to become too big a star. They want the prices to be reasonable. I mean, you've noticed what a lot of people in your sport have, that if you have some showman in you, if mm-hmm. you can talk a good game, if you can embrace the marketing of mm-hmm. it, and in some ways be disrespectful to the reasons you chose the mixed martial arts originally, mm-hmm. You can sell a fight by disrespecting everything you actually care about here, because I'm guessing you have some purity of warrior spirit.
Oh, 100%. Like, you know, you strip everything away. I started in Laogao Kung Fu. It's a very respectful style. You know, you walk in, you have to bow to walk into a room, you bow to leave the room, you bow to your fellow students, you bow to your instructor. You know, everything is show respect first, yeah? And then later on, as I'm doing the competitions, I start to learn how to be creative and entertain. But the style of kickboxing I did was called freestyle kickboxing. It's like going into a sports hall and there's just matted areas everywhere and everybody's competing for attention. So there was like an unwritten rule where, you know, you try to show off a little bit without, you know, and no, there was no disrespect. Everybody kind of, it was just a thing that everybody would try to do. And it got to the point where the second I stepped on the mat, because they knew I had antics in me, the whole competition stopped because the referees wanted to see what I was going to do. The other fighters wanted to, and they're ready to fight, but they're like, no, I want to see him. And that it got to that level. And all I'd done was, when I crossed into the mixed martial arts world, I just continued. I said to myself, if I'm going to do this, I have to do it in my style, my way. Otherwise, I just don't want to do it.
Michael, if I came at you looking for a fight and I was armed with a pencil, how long would it take you to kill me?
Is it sharpened?
Yes.
Yeah, sharp pencil, yeah?
Yeah, sharp.
It's as sharp as a pencil can get. Yes. Oh,
okay. 1 second.
What?
To kill him?
1 second.
It'd be a head kick.
I have a pencil.
He would be dead within the second? Presumably, wouldn't take you 9 seconds?
You're using the pencil against him.
No. You keep the pencil.
Wow.
It makes it somewhat more
a
even.
Non-fighter.
What if he had two pencils?
Now. How? 2 seconds.
Wait, a second per pencil.
Exactly. thank you. Congratulations. I don't think people generally understand how difficult it is to do what you guys do. I won't even ask you about how poorly they paid you in your last fight, because I wish you had full freedom to negotiate that gets you guys paid better than you're paid.
No, you know, here's the thing for me, and everyone said, do you find that you took too long to get to the UFC? And I feel like I said, always say my path was chosen for me, and it's chosen for a reason. And because of the noise that I made outside, I mean, it allowed me to, you know, be paid, you know, really well coming into. So, you know,
because you come over from Bellator and you had established your star,
exactly.
You're a value who was able to come up another level because you're as skilled as they have in the UFC.
Exactly. So I'm doing well.
Thank you for being on with us. We appreciate it.
No, I appreciate you guys. It's been amazing. Thank you, guys.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Don Lebatard.
We got Afrini Hardaway.
Afrini? Who was Afrini Hardaway?
I was trying to read fast. UD was on the team. Luke Jackson. Bobby Jones. Matrix, Sean Marion.
Stugatz.
Who?
Zoe, Shaq, Smush Parker. Chris Quinn.
Wait a minute.
D Wade.
Wait a minute.
Jason Williams, Darrell Wright. I mean, stacked roster.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz.
We need to get to Stugatz's winners and losers from yesterday. Man. We're going to keep getting sidetracked because we're going to lament the death with finality of Deadspin. We're going to talk to Craig Robinson, who is very funny. And I've got some more football stuff to get to. Again, Mookie Betts is a shortstop now.
Crazy.
Greg Cody wants prosthetic ears. I don't know if Billy got out all his magic takes. Did you, or was there more there that you had to say on magic? I know.
Well,
you wanted...
we didn't even get to it. We were just talking about how, you know, there's a magician that has been suspended from the Magic Castle. But it's fine. We started talking about the secret society, and I'm happy kind of with the way that it went. The coterie.
But what about? I'm glad that you're happy with the way that it went. But I felt like we never got to what it is that you wanted to talk about.
I am fascinated as how a magician gets banned, or excuse me, illusion. I don't want to disparage.
No, his name's Murray the Magician, okay. So I think it's fine. Well, that he goes by Magician.
Well, they're still making Murrays. That might just because
Murray
the Magician sounds better than Murray the Illusionist.
Doesn't roll off the tongue.
Yeah.
Ian the Illusionist, that would be good.
I like where your head's at.
Yeah.
So what did he do?
Well, Murray the Magician went on TikTok with, I believe, his wife, and they were revealing how certain magic tricks were done, and the Magic Castle was not happy with that. And they said, you know what, Murray the Magician? Banned from the Magic Castle.
Good magician never reveals his secrets. You know that, right?
Never.
Murray's argument was that these are like popular magic tricks that can be purchased on Amazon and stuff like that. Like, yeah, you could buy.
You can't
these
purchase
from,
magic, Billy.
Right. We should probably
don't
endeavor.
Tell Murray, not me. I'm not.
We should endeavor to get Murray the Magician on. We should endeavor to get Murray the Magician on. But also, when you're a part of the Magic Castle, it's an esteemed group. Many magicians work their entire careers and they don't achieve the heights of that. You are basically a caretaker of the great arts, and you have to protect the industry at all costs. And I think the Magic Castle was well within their rights to do this.
I have seen some videos, I don't know if it's Murray the Magician or another, where I was fascinated by how quickly and well somebody gave up the magic tricks on hand stuff, on cards, and they were illusions that were like, oh, that's easy, and it ruined the whole thing for me. Really, you harm the industry if you give away too many of the secrets. Because it looked really easy. I'm like, oh, I can't believe I fell for that. I was wondering. It was great to have that mystery of not. I felt like it was in the other hand. How did it move hands? Oh, he just put it behind his hand.
Dan, now you're doing it.
Sleight of hand.
Be careful. Yeah. You're going to be banned from Magic Castle.
Okay.
His argument was, it's not like, quote, it's not like I'm getting David Copperfield's tricks or Chris Angel's shin limbs and going, here's how they do it. I don't know is. Yeah, but he just
blew one of the great illusions. What is, even in his apology, he's blowing magic. Murray.
Well, let's, in fairness, Murray. We should have Murray come on and defend, you know.
Yes.
You can't give away the secrets. You can't be in the secret code. He's out here advocating for secret clubs, and secret clubs have rules. Yeah. And the Magic Club, I believe, one of the great rules, maybe the only rule, it can be even unspoken, is you don't tell people how you do the tricks.
Yeah. Right. It's a closed society. Like when you're in the coterie, you know, there's a code. There's an initiation,
yeah,
and all of this stuff is very secretive.
But if you sell the secrets, though, that's a heady play,
yeah,
right?
You can't do that.
I think
Murray.
The play that you do is, like, because obviously magic industry is very competitive, right? Yeah. I mean, we were just in Las Vegas. There's magicians, all kinds of shows all over the place, right?
So it's hard to stand out.
If I'm Murray the Magician and I figure out David Copperfield's tricks, bet your bottom dollar I'm going out there and telling everyone exactly how it's done. Then David Copperfield can figure out my tricks and then try to ruin it for me. But if I'm Murray the Magician, I'm out there squealing like a pig, telling everybody how everything is done so that people can go to my magic shows trying to figure out my magic.
Well, can you guys help me with a portion of how the business works? Because I have maintained that being a poet in the modern age is a really, really hard way to make a living. Not a lot of corporations hiring poets.
It's honestly irresponsible.
Magician seems really hard for me to make a living. I don't think there are more than like 100 of them.
MMA fighter, it's kind of in the same
way. Also,
what about the tarot card readers?
No, that's fair. That's a big year last year.
Anytime I see like a building, it's like, come get your.
That's different.
That's
tarot
different.
Cards are killing it.
That's real.
Yeah. Magic. Yeah. Making a career out of magic. How often can you do that?
There are certain like schools and universities that I feel like should be held liable for having like bogus like bachelor's and degrees that they give out. Like you should be responsible when you're taking that much money from someone and be like, look, guys, our poetry bachelor's. You're not going to do anything with that.
Would you like one in magic?
We're going to discontinue the magic program because it's just, it's not going to pan
out. All right, put it on
you.
The poll, please, Juju, at Levitard Show. Harder way to make a living, poetry or magic?
I feel like poets peaked in the 19th century. Mm. At least we still have active musicians.
Dead Poet Society, Greg.
Magicians.
What did I say?
Yeah. Musicians.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah. Right. There's more musicians than magicians.
There's some musicians that are poets.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But very few magicians
Bob
that are
Dylan.
Poets.
Yeah. How do they saw in half that person on the stage, though?
We should ask Murray.
Yeah. You know, how do they do
that? Sullivan, do this. Next week, have the magician come on with Greg, because I feel like this is a Greg guest.
The Greg Cody Show featuring Greg Cody. Go do it over there.
I like that.
Go talk to Murray the magician.
We love guests named Murray. No matter what they do or what they're talking about, who they are.
Never had a Murray on.
If your name is Murray, you have a home on the Greg Cody Show podcast.
Murray!
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Just keep magicians and illusionists in high regard. This might be the only chance we have against the artificial intelligence.
Huh. You have like four or five that could do it in Vegas, and then how much demand is there for touring magic acts all over? Like I'm dead ass serious when I ask you guys how many people are making a living right now as magicians.
The mind freak.
Chris Angel's been
through. Yeah. No, David Blaine.
I don't know if he's a magician anymore, Dan. He's just like a guy that
he does stunts now.
Yeah, it's like
Copperfield's still killing it. That guy made it. Like you talk about haves and have nots.
Is he still killing it? He has a residency.
I think
he's still with us.
Copperfield was on the side of a building.
Yep.
That name that name, go read what he owns. What, like, talk about haves and have-nots. Like, there is a poor underclass of magicians who are working at your kid's birthday party, and then Copperfield's buying islands.
He owns magic. Yeah. I mean,
didn't he make the Statue of Liberty disappear?
He did.
On TV.
Yes.
That's wild.
Mm-hmm.
On television. And there were, like, eyewitnesses that said it was gone. That is scale, my friend.
I Googled how many magicians are there in the world, and it says there's 30,000 to 50,000 magicians worldwide. But I also see here how many magicians are there in the U.S., and it says more than 219.
Is that something from a bygone era? The network television special for a magician?
Useless one.
What did Billy just say?
Very specific.
Tony, that is Billy pretending to produce the show by just looking at something.
How many people make no more than 219? That's what it says.
There was a writer's strike.
Zipia.com.
There was a writer's strike. We could have greenlit all these illusionist specials on network television. They used to mean something. From Evel Knievel to Chris Angel, getting a network special. No, I'm saying some people used to get network specials. Those tentpole.
Those were made for television. Wonderful. Gather around your TV events.
Yeah. Do you remember The Masked Magician?
I don't.
Oh, he had a couple of network specials on Fox where he was doing this, and it was just really harmful to the great art.
What was the name of the long snapper who managed to, like, you know, it's hard to make a career as a long snapper, but as a magician, him parlaying that, he was Kelsey before the Kelseys. That guy made a magic career out of being a long snapper. We had him in studio. We fawned all over him. He seemed a lot happier.
John Dornbus?
Yes.
Yeah. Male-dominated industry. Magic. Yeah,
and long snapping.
Yeah. Like 90 to 10. Yeah, it's true.
Both of them, actually. Speaking of magic, you guys explain to me how it is that Jalen Hurts looks like a professional quarterback and a guy who squats a million pounds when he has a goatee, but then he loses his goatee and he becomes Jason.
Look, I mean, it happens to the best of us, Dan. You know
Jason
how it is.
Jason Hurts.
You're trimming your beard. You're
I don't
doing
recognize
your
him. He looks like a dad. A dad with the thick eyebrows. Like he looks like somebody's father. He doesn't look like a young quarterback.
I like where Tony's going. This wasn't intentional.
Yeah, you miss it sometimes. You're like, ooh, this side's a little uneven. I got to just redo the whole thing.
I trust Jalen Hurts with a goatee. It's to be my quarterback. This other person I do not trust.
Totally different guy.
No,
he was forced to grow it back because the reaction to his clean-shaven look was so toxic.
Yeah. I mean,
like Doja Cat considered leaving Instagram.
Let's be honest about this, Tony. Let me put this back up here.
She'll
Tony.
Be back, by the way.
This is
always, it's always something
here.
With her.
I'm not afraid to say it. Maybe Tony's afraid to say it. I don't know if he'll side with me on this or not. Without the goatee, he looks Dominican.
Yeah, he does.
100%.
Yeah.
I mean,
100%.
Yeah.
That's not Jalen Hurts.
Can I agree?
If Jalen Hurts were to sit next to us in this room and you told me that this was him, let's get
my grandmother is Dominican. That dude's been over for dinner.
He's eating mangu for sure.
At,
salami.
At 4:30 p.m.
You're saying without it, he's J-Lang.
She's an angel. She's going to turn 95.
I tell him que lo que, tire, dime.
Yes, that's what I'm saying, and that is a less trusted quarterback. Martinez played for a while for Nebraska.
There were four Martinez's that played for a while at Nebraska.
That was the same one. But
just changed the name.
I cannot give a big contract to the Dominican quarterback because I have no proof that the Dominican quarterback can be good.
I guarantee you he's got a hose.
Oh, whoa.
Mm. I'm fine, Chooch.
Thank you.
You guys, get your minds out of the gutters, man. Not everything's a thing.
I want to also look at, real quick here, Lane Johnson. I don't know if you guys saw this because
His dick is probably big, too.
Here is Lane Johnson who blocked.
If they're of a certain height, you just, vintage quarterback, you know, 6'6". Yeah, 6'6", you know. Usually you can start drawing conclusions.
The Philadelphia Eagles back.
Unless he did steroids.
The Philadelphia Eagles
backfield.
That's
a testicle thing, though, isn't it?
No. It happened. Penis size, too.
Oh.
This means Tony has a hose.
Speaking of steroids, here's Lane Johnson.
We're used to.
He is walking in the gym with 705 pounds. Here is video of Lane Johnson. This is what the Philadelphia Eagles, it'll be Saquon Barkley, it'll be Jalen Hurts, and it'll be, this is Lane Johnson, that's 705 pounds.
I thought that was Russillo at first.
Damn. Put on some pants, mister.
Why is Russillo doing that in his underwear? Those are just straight underwear. Those are not shorts.
Yeah, that's what Russillo does every time he subtweets us.
What is happening with the, those are straight underwear. Those are just, that's not, he. Why does he need to work? You can't put a pair of shorts on?
You can't put big shorts on when you're doing farmer carries like that.
Yeah, you're trying to show off the quads. Yeah,
exactly. It almost looks like those are shorts that are tucked in a little.
Yeah, you got to roll them up. Let the people see the quads that he's working on. That's incredible.
And so now Saquon Barkley leaves New York, and Tiki Barber has said that he's dead to me.
Who cares?
Because he left to Philadelphia.
Who cares?
Rivalries matter.
Tiki Barber, you're dead to me. Okay. All right. The back I would have texted him back. Okay.
I'm not even kidding you. This is how it went. This for modern media is perfect. Good. Tiki says to Saquon that. Saquon says, you've been a hater since I've been here. Don't smile to my face when I see you. And you know what Tiki sent them? Quoting. Be that way.
Yeah. Wow. Clever.
He says, I like Saquon. Be that way. Fine. He actually said, fine, be that way.
The Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe plug-in hybrid is built for the best of both worlds. For the city buzz, for the call of the wild, for finding solitude, for sharing memories, for day trips, and for far-roaming adventures. Because with gas and electric capability, the Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe inspires you to explore more, to explore it all. Tap the banner to learn more. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
Dan Le Batard.
He, for some reason, would do a Gary Stevens impersonation of the offensive coordinator of the Miami Dolphins and the University of Miami. Go ahead. Do you want to do that for the people? Your Gary Stevens impersonation? You want to give people some of that? 30 years in the making.
Stugatz.
What? Who needs me?
Oh, that?
What? Do that my whole life. You're going to go to Buffalo and win with Bernie Pomeli? Who needs me?
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz.
I know that a lot of people now in the modern media, Stugatz, are afraid of athletes coming into the space and are threatened by athletes coming into the modern media space. But I remember the first time I felt like something was a threat to journalism because young people liked it and it was doing things much differently than traditional sports journalism was doing it. I remember blogs being the first threat to traditional sports journalism, and Deadspin was the biggest of those blogs, the most revolutionary of those blogs. Dangerous, did good journalism, but also did dirty things, was on the cusp of cutting edge, sort of how do we attract young people and change the way information is delivered. And so I actually felt sad yesterday, even though Julie DeCaro is basically running zombie Deadspin. She's been trying to keep the spirit of that alive for many years, and it's hard, and there's a lot of defense, corporate defense being played against her, and we wanted to have Julie on to both respect what Deadspin was once upon a time, good and bad, because they did plenty of bad too, but they were groundbreaking. They were pioneering, and yesterday a European company bought it, fired all the staff, and so I wanted to talk to Julie about what happened. Julie, thank you for making the time for us.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on.
So tell us about the history here and how heartbreaking the details of yesterday were to you personally.
Yeah, it was heartbreaking. That's a good word for it. I was a huge fan of Deadspin from its iteration. I came up through blogs as well. That's how I made my way into mainstream media. So, it was mainstream media as Deadspin ended up. It was tough. I mean, for those of us that really loved Deadspin and cared about the kind of work that they did, I think about Diana Moskovitz's work. She was one of the first person I know who would go to the police and actually get the records when an athlete was accused of harming someone and, put those up for the whole world to see so that nobody could sort of take an athlete who'd been violence against women and minimize what he had done. That kind of stuff. I mean, Drew Magrie's Why Your Team Sucked was great. By the time I got to Deadspin in 2019, I'd always wanted to work there, but it did feel like being, like you're getting to a party right as everyone's just kind of starting to make their way out. That was sort of the feeling there. And I don't know that management ever really understood what made Deadspin work in the first place, why it was so beloved, why it had such a dedicated audience. And so for, the last 4 years, 3.5 years, however long I was there, there were a few of us that were trying to still do that kind of work, but, obviously met with some resistance.
Well, speak on that, please. Not some resistance, right? Now it can be told, can it not? How much resistance?
Yeah, I mean, what I would say is that what's happening at Deadspin, I don't think is unique to Deadspin. I think that, you know, we've sort of been singled out as, you know, the example because of what happened in 2019 when the entire staff quit in protest. But, you know, it's a thing of Google algorithms ruling everything, of being constantly encouraged to write not about what you want to write about and what's interesting, but or what you think your readers will find interesting, but what's trending on Google. It's a lot of SEO stuff. It's a lot of, you know, you can't swear in headlines because it affects our Google ranking. You can't do this because it affects our Google ranking. Google really is sort of running the show these days. And I'm not sure that the general public understands to the extent that that's affecting what you read in the news that you're getting. Because, you know, every outlet now has an SEO guru who's sitting there and is constantly looking at what's happening on Google and how we're ranking and why we aren't ranking well. And those are the people really that are sort of calling the shots. You know, we would sit in meetings with management and be told constantly, you know, why didn't you write about this? Why didn't you write about that? This story did a million hits for this site. Why didn't you write about that? And so it really became a game of how many readers can I get to read this rather than good journalism, which is what I think many of us went there intending to try to do.
All right. So Deadspin, I'm not sure a lot of people would associate it necessarily with good journalism, even though I do. So I would ask you this question as you're trying to or dedicated your career in spirit to trying to protect a certain thing. As you see a lot of disinformation spreading and corporations buying journalism and knocking out local news and the algorithms dictating what information is spread, how close are we to propaganda because something like Deadspin simply can't exist today? It's going to get overrun by the algorithms.
Yeah, I think we're already there. I mean, we've seen it all over the place. I mean, there are things, I mean, I'm off Twitter now for the most part, but I mean, you see things there all the time that people take as the God's honest truth and you know, it's false. And it comes out a few days later that it's false. But by that point, the damage has already been done. So, you know, you've got these VC guys coming into journalism, seeing it as a profit-making enterprise. And, you know, they come in and what equity firms do is strip away resources, layoffs, everything to squeeze every last dime out of a company before they sell it for its parts. And I mean, Geo Media has lost Lifehacker. They've lost Jezebel. They've lost now Deadspin. You know, everything's being sold off for its parts. And it's not just happening at Deadspin. It's happening across the media landscape. I think that Katie Britt response to the State of the Union address, where she, you know, completely misrepresented a story of a woman that has supposedly been trafficked. It wasn't even a journalist that discovered that. It was a TikToker who was the person who looked into it, because there just aren't journalists to do these jobs anymore. And you'd be much more likely to be told, hey, we need a slideshow on, you know, the 50 best wide receivers of all time, rather than doing something that might actually matter, that might actually be something that that, you know, goes towards the truth, that exposes something. That, you know, there's too many people out there that just want to click through slideshows, and everyone complains about them, but everyone clicks on them. So that's what the powers that be want everyone to do.
50 wide receivers of all time, you say?
I got the room's attention there.
Ask Chris Carter. You're going to forget Calvin.
Let me throw a little bit of chum in the water here. Tyrod Taylor's going to the Jets.
Ooh, backing up Aaron Rodgers. Interesting.
Mike Gesicki, Cincinnati Bengal, 1-year contract. Mike Gesicki.
Not bad. I like that.
All right. Just keeping you guys.
Where's Julian Edelman? Is he top 50?
Did you know that Austin Hooper is still under 30?
What?
Get out of here.
He's 29.
Julie, I'm curious because this part is, you just sort of skipped over it. So just quickly, the history. Entire staff quit in protest.
Yeah. So in 2019, when Geo Media bought The Onion, bought Deadspin, moved Deadspin to Chicago, you know, Deadspin used to do all kinds of non-sports related things. So they would write about Trump. They did, you know, 50 things people put in their butts this year. Like, you know, all these amazing like content that didn't have anything to do with sports.
Another good category, though.
50,
another
say.
Good category. Yeah, wow.
Where's that Dune popcorn butts? Bucket?
Another category that's really strong. I can't even argue with the journalism of that. I'll click on that every time.
50. Slides.
You
wow. Click
through 50 slides of that, right? I would. So, you know, in my understanding, and I wasn't there for this, was that the mandate was, and what I was told when I started, was you can write about anything you want, but it has to have a tangential relationship to sports. again, I wasn't there in 2019, so I just know what I've read from the people who were there. But my understanding is that the day after that mandate came down, they did an entire front page that had nothing to do with sports as a protest. And that resulted in their EIC getting fired and then everyone quit in protest. So Deadspin was shut down for, you know, a good, I don't know, 6 months, something like that. Everyone was telling everyone else, you know, you can't, don't work there, don't work for this guy, don't write for Deadspin, which I was on board with. I mean, I thought it was an incredibly principled stance. And then the pandemic hit. And so suddenly I didn't have a radio gig. They were resurrecting Deadspin. They reached out to me the day it was announced that my radio show was canceled. And, you know, there were people there, there were journalists there, Jesse Spector, Sam Fells, who I really respected their writing and their work. And I thought, well, you know, I've got two kids in college. I don't have a ton of options. So I was part of that, you know, resurrection of Deadspin that's been going on since early 2020. And, you know, during that time, Jim Spanfeller became involved with the site. You know, you can Google his name.
Let me stop you there. Who is Jim Spanfeller? Because this history, this is a person who basically made it so you couldn't do anything but cover sports and not particularly well, correct?
Yeah, I would say that's true. I mean, I was never told that there was anything. That's not true. I was told there were things I couldn't write about. And basically that had to do with making fun of the decisions we used for AI, that they were using AI at Deadspin. So Jim Spanfeller is a member of a private equity guy from Great Hill Partners. I know he was at Forbes before this. I don't know his whole history, but he came in and took over a CEO of Geo. So that's, you know, Deadspin, Jezebel, Gawker, Quartz, Gawker's gone, Quartz, you know, Jalopnik, Eater, all those sites, The Onion. And, you know, quickly, I think his way of doing things became the way that it was his way or the highway. You know, you're hauled into traffic meetings and, you know, asked questions about why isn't your site performing better? And you'd say, well, the site's crammed with ads. People are complaining about it. I can't even read on my article on mobile because there's too many ads. Nobody wanted to hear that. We're going to change the whole homepage. We're going to give it a whole different look. You know, and that's not a great idea. The fans are really, you know, loyal and dedicated to this iteration of the site. That doesn't matter. You know, more slideshows, more clickable things, more things to get people to click on, more SEO words and headlines. That was the order of the day, and journalism came second to all that.
But you also, one of the most popular posts in Deadspin history was headline, Jim Spanfeller is a herb.
Yeah. Huh.
With pictures of him looking like a loser as well. So you were going after management there understandably trying to protest from within inside the machine. I want to play for you some sound from season two of Succession. It's Kendall walking into the company Valter, which seems based on Gawker. You tell me how accurate this felt.
Some of you may have noticed servers are down. And we're setting a satellite office on 7. And I'm afraid I have to inform you, you are all dismissed. Yeah, you're all fired.
Wait, what?
So if you can leave your laptops where they are and hand in your passes, security will be coming around now. Been through everything you've shown me. Food and weed. Those are the only two verticals driving revenue, so we're folding them in. And yeah, you're all free to leave.
What was yesterday like?
It was kind of like that. We had a little bit more. I mean, look, anyone working in journalism these days feels like the sword of Damocles is hanging over your head every day when you go to work. I mean, Sports Illustrated, Vice, like you name it, you're watching mass layoffs and you're watching basically the implosion of journalism in real time. So when we got a note at 11:30 that there was a mandatory meeting for Deadspin and everyone had to be there, we were sort of like, wow, this is exactly what happened to Jezebel right before they shut the site down. So then it was 30 minutes of abject terror. We jump on this Zoom call. Our deputy editorial director is there. She's been the one who's dropping the hammer on everybody. HR is there. So at that point, we pretty much knew the writing was on the wall. You know, by the time the meeting was over, it probably took 15 minutes. We were out of Slack. We were locked out of, you know, our email, locked out of Google Drive, where a lot of our documents were. People are frantically trying to archive all their stories. But yeah, I mean, I think that Succession nailed it. I think I always thought that was based on BuzzFeed, but could be Gawker as well, because it's happening everywhere. And so it just sort of felt like it's our turn. Like, you know, everyone knew this was going to happen sooner or later.
I know no one cares about this, but it's a bummer, man.
Ah, the NFL news, Dan. It never stops. According to Diana Rossini, the great Diana Rossini, Titans running back Derrick Henry has had a conversation with the Ravens. I love a good conversation.
Oh,
I
mean, a conversation has been
continue
had.
Yours, by the way.
Yeah, you don't want any more of it. What else do we need to know here? Just what's the punctuation you would like us to put on this? Because Deadspin was it was a fun, wild meteor that was dangerous. Did, like I said, some things wrong. I could chronicle them, but they were trying to carry the spirit of muckraking journalism in the modern time. So, what words would you leave us with, Julie?
You know, I think that people need to care where their news comes from. When you're hearing that, you know, ESPN is in talks to, or that NFL wants to acquire part of ESPN, things like that. I mean, people need to realize if you don't like the news you're getting, you don't like things that are happening, it's because everything is being congealed into like one media company that is in bed with all the leaks. And so, you know, people would say to us on Deadspin all the time, where are the stories about, you know, the owners who are secretly racist? Where are the investigations into sexual harassment at? Well, first of all, journalists don't have time to do those stories anymore because everyone is having to crank out two or three stories every day. So you simply don't have time to do that investigation. But you have to care where your news comes from. And it can't just be the NFL sending, you know, Ian Rappaport and Adam Schefter in there to cover things when that they are doing a different kind of journalism than what I was raised to do. And I think that you need to care if the teams are in bed with the media outlets, if the people in bed with or people who own the media outlets don't care about journalism, only care about clicks, it's getting increasingly difficult to find places to go where that isn't the case. And unfortunately, you know, it's what's happened at Sports Illustrated, Advice. It's happened in a million places. It's been all over the news. It's hard because people just don't seem to care about journalism anymore. And I really fear not just for sports, but for the country where we're going. If
care,
people don't
care only enough to hate it.
Yeah.
Ah, the NFL news never stops. Julie just mentioned Adam Schefter, and Adam Schefter is reporting Marcus Mariota is now a Commander. Him and Sam Howell. You know what happens, Dan, when you have two quarterbacks? You know what it means, right? You don't have one.
Keep on Sam Howell this year.
Julie takes too many sacks. Julie, thank you for being on with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Dan.
Got to think they're drafting a third.
Right.
Thank you, Julie.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting and rules for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text LOSE to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text LOSE to 200-300. That's LOSE to 200-300. LOSE to 200-300.